Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back to the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm Sean Penrod, your host, and today we have a great guest lined up for you like we do each and every week, twice a week. In fact, we bring on the best and brightest Magic the Gathering players in the world, those who make top 8 of a Grand Prix or top 16 of a Pro Tour or are just doing good things in Magic. Sometimes we have community notables on as well, but we bring on these amazing players. We talk about their history with Magic, where they got started, the struggles that they faced, how they overcame them, so we can bridge the gap between where we are and where they are. The goal here is to help 1,000 players qualify for the Pro Tour, and I'm so excited to be doing that, to carve out this little space in the Magic arena and help you guys get better at Magic. So before we dive in, I do want to say thank you to the patrons of the show. It's because of you that all this is made possible, so I really do appreciate your support. It would not happen without you. And if you are interested in becoming a patron, you go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. Basically, you can pledge any amount you want per episode. You can set a monthly cap so you never go out of budget. And then as a thank you, each and every month, I do a patron-exclusive giveaway, and the prize is provided by Paragon City Games, who is the other proud sponsor of the show. So thank you, Paragon City Games, for all you do. Feel free to check them out at ParagonCityGames.com. Now, one more thing. Last episode, I mentioned that the MTG Pro Tutor t-shirts are ready to go. So you can go to mtgprotutor.com/t-shirt, and you'll find that we have two styles. One says Hero Among Planeswalkers, and the other says Depart Every Plane Victorious on the back. And there are women and men styles and sizes. So check those out if you feel so inclined. This first run, there's only a limited number of each size. But once we move these, I'll be able to order more. And if the size you're looking for is not available, let me know, and I'll make sure to order it next time. So that's really it for the top of the interview. We have a great guest. Let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest has two Grand Prix top eights, one in Houston 2013 and one in Las Vegas 2017. He's coming to us from Vancouver, Canada. Prodigies near and far. Let's welcome the one, the only, Monty Davoodi. Monty, how you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to have you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, this is exciting. Let's do it.
Excellent. Now, Prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Monty, you can do so on Twitter. He's at ZapGaze, at ZapGaze. So look him up there, say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question, but that is how you can find him. So, Monty, first and foremost, are you born and raised in Vancouver?
I'm not. I was born in Tehran, Iran.
Oh, okay.
And I moved to Vancouver when I was 8, and I've been there ever since.
All right. And so have you done all your schooling and did you do university there as well? Or
I did most of elementary school, all of high school, and then I went to university for a while before choosing not to continue for personal reasons. But all of that happened in Vancouver.
Okay. And is Magic full-time for you, or are you working as well?
Right now, Magic is not full-time for me. I've been working at a family business for the past 5 years now. So in and of itself, it gives me more time and flexibility to do Magic than a normal job would. Yeah. But I definitely would not call it full-time at the moment.
Yeah. And what's the family business?
It's a print shop. We do shirts, signs, nice. Business cards, anything that businesses need to promote themselves.
Excellent. And do you have siblings that you get to work with and play with and all that stuff?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
I'm an only child.
Only child. Nice. Awesome. So where did you get your gaming bug then? Did you play games with your parents, or like where did that come about?
Yeah, when I was a kid, my dad really got me into video games. He was a computer guy. Even in Iran back then, technology was kind of behind for its time, which is kind of weird to say because like in 1993, 1994, whenever this was, technology as a whole was behind. But like in Iran, it was behind what it was at in the States.
But my dad,
being the technology nerd, for lack of a better word, that he was, he had a nice computer. He had games. Bootlegs, most of them, and he kind of would sit me on his lap while he would play some sort of fighting game or something, and I would be really into it, and that's kind of how my love of video games started. But my love of card games actually even precedes my dad to my grandparents.
Okay.
They really part of their culture and part of the Iranian culture was on days of rest, especially the elders would get together and they would play some sort of card game using traditional cards, but it varied what each group of people would play.
Right.
But I just remembered any family gathering on any holiday or even just on a weekend, I would see all of my grandparents and or my parents sitting around a table playing cards. And I was super into it. It was totally my jam.
What kind of card games? I mean, are they even ones that we know here or like hearts or whatever? Like,
so one was a variation on Rummy that was popular on one side of the family.
So like a run making type game.
Yeah. The other is, it's more popular in the Middle East, France, and like some of the Eastern European countries. It's called Belote. It's a trick taking game.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Awesome. So trick taking games and run making games and stuff like that. That's really neat.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Very cool. So, and then, so being, into video games from a young age, are you playing any now?
Not really. Growing up, I played a lot of video games. Mm-hmm. And then as I got more into Magic, especially Magic Online, I saw Magic Online more and more replacing my video game time. Because anytime I would have the time to play a game, I would kind of weigh this calculation of I could enjoy myself playing this game or I could enjoy myself playing Magic and also feel productive because it feels like I'm putting practice in.
Mm.
So more or less any video game time that I had, I would just be playing Magic Online.
Nice. Good for you. Good for you. That's a good way to think about it, you know, to reframe your thinking and approach it that way. So
it's awesome. Debatable. It's got its upsides and downsides.
Well, I mean, like you said, how do you want to spend your, for lack of a better word, like recreation time, right? And like you said, it was a good way to think about it. Okay, so I have time to fool around and play and have fun, and I can do that on a video game or I can do that on Magic. And if I do Magic, I also get the added benefit of prepping for, you know, the tournament that's coming up or whatever.
Right. It feels like productive fun.
Yeah, productive fun. Yeah, so true. For me, if I sit down to play a video game right now, it's 95% going to be Overwatch. So that's my thing.
Nice.
So, and that's because I'm done with Breath of the Wild. So anyways.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild's one that it's like one of the exceptions that I could see myself picking up and kind of delving into a break from card games.
For sure. So on the note of card games, we would love to hear your origin story with Magic. So take us back in time. Tell us the story. We want to be right there with you of the very first time you saw or played with Magic cards. What did that look like?
So when I was in high school, probably around grade 9 or 10, I was really into Yu-Gi-Oh cards. And I wouldn't really play competitively just because the idea of showing up to a tournament on the weekend wasn't realistic. And I would never convince my parents to like take me somewhere for me to play in a tournament. But I had a small collection and I had a bunch of friends that were into the game, so I would play. And around school, I would see some of the quote unquote older kids playing a different card game, which looked really complicated. It looked like it had these cards that didn't seem like they did anything, but everyone had a bunch of them, which were lands, and that was Magic. So I would watch them play sometimes, but I wouldn't really understand what was happening. And around, I think it was mid-grade 10 or so, my entire Yu-Gi-Oh! Collection went missing.
Oh, no.
Just out of the blue. I have some theories about how it happened, but I was never really able to prove anything. But after that happened, I was kind of done with card games. I was demoralized. It wasn't a super valuable collection, but it was something I put time and money into.
Of course.
And then some of the friends I had were like, well, here, you should play this game Magic with us for a bit. So I kind of, that was what got me into trying it super casually. And I kind of got hooked as soon as I learned the rules. And from there, it was just, it escalated pretty quickly.
Excellent. So you had some friends that brought you in. That's really neat.
Yeah.
That's fun. Do you remember what that first set was for you?
Yes, it was. I started playing I was introduced to the game in Lorwyn. So it was part of it. Part of the reason I really got into it was the art style of Lorwyn. Yes. Really resonated with me. Yeah. It was this fantasy theme in, and I really enjoyed the creature types. I love the art style and everything of it. Everything just felt kind of dreamy.
Yes,
and
it did.
That really, really was something I connected with.
Yeah. Excellent. And what is your favorite set?
Oh man, that's a hard one. I really enjoyed the Scars of Mirrodin block as a whole. Part of it, I think, is because that was the year I first had some real success with Magic, just by going to my first Pro Tour, going to Canadian Nationals. And the other part was it was a set that felt really powerful. There were a lot of cards that kind of surpassed the power level of what we'd seen up to that point. Mm-hmm. And it was really exciting to play with cards like Wurmcoil Engine and get to play with cards like Batterskull and Sword of Feast and Famine and Mirroring Crusader and all of these cards that were just extremely powerful for specific roles. So that was probably, I would say Scars of Mirrodin block as a whole would be my favorite time just because of both the cards and the memories associated with it.
Nice. Nice. And along the same lines of favorites, what is one of your favorite cards?
One of my favorite cards.
It doesn't have to be the favorite because it's hard. There's thousands. So just one that stands out to you that you like.
I really actually, and this is, wow, this is a really hard question. I really love the card Birthing Pod. I think that was the time when I felt like I got to make the most interesting decisions in both deck building and play was when I was playing the original Birthing Pod deck.
So real quick, for those of us who don't know, what is it? What does it do? And then go on with why you like it.
All right. So Birthing Pod is a 4-mana artifact. It costs 3 and then a Phyrexian green mana. And it is an artifact that you can pay 1 and a Phyrexian green and tap it and sacrifice a creature to search your library for a creature that costs 1 more than the sacrifice creature and put it into play. And you can only activate it as a sorcery. So the whole idea of the card is you get to build this toolbox deck where at every converted mana cost, you have to think about situations in which you're going to want certain effects, whether it be something like an Orzhov Pontiff to deal with your opponent's board, whether it be something like a Viridian Shaman to deal with an artifact. There's all these creatures in Magic that do kind of specific things. And to have an effect like that, that let you prepare yourself and build your deck to be able to kind of deal with everything, was something that really excited me because mm-hmm. it was this world of infinite possibilities. And then you add to it an infinite combo, like the Malyra combo, and suddenly you have this game plan that you're trying to set up at all times. But while you're trying to set it up, instead of being this all-in combo deck, you're this deck that has answers to everything in the format. And that was just incredible.
I love that. I love that idea because, like, right now the deck that really has my eye in Modern is I love the Abzan Company type builds or the Abzan, you know, Court of Calling builds.
Like because, the Counters Company deck. Right?
Well, yeah, because similar idea. I love the idea of going and getting what I need to solve the problem, and I love the idea of combos, you know? And so so I think it would have really resonated with Birthing Pod back in the day as well. So it sounds like it was the
idea
the precursor.
That you can put one Kataki somewhere in your deck, and suddenly with that one Kataki, thanks to Court of Calling and thanks to Collected Company, you have access to somewhere between 7 to like 8 copies of it is just insane. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Yeah. 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 And in this deck, you know, there's one Murderous Redcap, for example, you know, you don't need any more than that. And so it's really cool. It's just to go get what you need. And so Birthing Pod played out similarly in that you had one ofs and a game plan that you're able to execute and as well as keep answering your opponents.
Exactly.
Nice, man. Love it. Awesome. Birthing Pod for the win. So when you started taking Magic seriously and kind of moving on up, what was an early struggle that you faced, but that you eventually overcame?
So when I was getting into Magic originally, one of the problems was right as I was truly getting into Magic, after I'd gone to a few pre-releases, I moved slightly away to Victoria for university. And while I was there, I was living in dorms, and nobody else from my high school, from my graduating class, had gone to Victoria. So when I moved there, I had no friends. I didn't know anybody. And it was really hard for me to, I'd kind of gotten familiar with the Magic scene in Vancouver, and I made friends, and suddenly I'd moved away from all that. So I was away from events. I was away from everything. And for a while, I was kind of in the state where I wasn't able to play Magic as much, where I would have to do like an hour long bus ride to get to the nearest store. And it wasn't the most fun. But once I started getting into Magic Online, that kind of really helped mitigate those downsides. And that's what kind of took me from a casual Magic player who was more or less playing to enjoy himself to actually putting more time into the game. And that's what lit my competitive fire, because that was at the time when Magic Online PTQs had been introduced. So without leaving the house or the dorm room, as it was, I could be competitive. And that really ignited a fire for me to put more time into the game. And I started playing a lot more from then on.
Wow. That's neat that you, I mean, that's neat that you're able to, you know, to share that. And that's kind of stinks that, you know, like you said, you're out there and felt separated from the community that you had, you know, grown accustomed to, but as a result, you're able to find Magic Online, which really opened a lot of doors for you. So that's neat that you turned adversity into an advantage. So,
right.
That's pretty cool. So what, do you have any Magic mentors, either players that you know in person or people that you admire from afar that have influenced you as a player?
Honestly, it's a lot of the Magic community in Vancouver, and I wouldn't so much call them mentors because no one really mentored me. It was more that I was this person that wasn't really good. And at the time, I wasn't even the easiest person to get along with. But I was this person that was new into the community. And a lot of people, like a shocking number of people, really accepted me and were super open about me joining their playgroup. And they invited me to join high level team drafts, which, you know, maybe it was because I was easy money. But really, it was, I got to play with all these people that had been playing for years and who were really excellent players in Vancouver. Yeah. People that when I first started playing and I would see them at a pre-release or at an FNM, I could say that these people were good players.
Yeah.
These people suddenly were just welcoming me into their group. And to get to play with them as my play group, it really accelerated my play level combined with Magic Online. It really accelerated my play level to something that just trying to do it on my own or just trying to play FNM, I would never have been able to. Mm-hmm. It was by playing with them and by making mistakes and having seeing them make mistakes and seeing how they approach their mistakes and how they talk to me about my mistakes was how I was able to get better at the game.
Yeah, man. Awesome. And also along your journey, what have been some of your Magic milestones that you can look back on? We'll get to, you know, your most recent successes, but were there other times kind of leading up to that or events that you said you were able to look back on and say, hey, I'm getting better and I'm kind of moving on up?
Yeah. So my first PTQ top 8 was probably the most memorable for me just because it was one of those situations where I'd been playing Magic Online PTQs for a while. And I played some live PTQs, but I hadn't had any good results. I don't even know if I'd come close to making a top 8. And just to set it in perspective, the Magic Online PTQs at the time, that was when they had not really put a cap on them, but also they it wasn't the PPTQ system. So you would see Magic Online PTQs that were 400, 500, 800 people.
Oh,
it would be
gosh.
PTQs that were the size of Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. And they would be like 10 rounds, 11 rounds. And it would be these massive events and way harder than any normal PTQ.
Yeah.
And me having some free time, not really being interested in what I was studying in school, I was playing all the PTQs that I could. And when I top aided my first PTQ on Magic Online, it was actually at a time when I was home. And I remember it before they started kind of standardizing the start times, PTQs would start at various times just to accommodate for the European crowd, etc. So this was a PTQ that started at around, I think, 6 or 7 in the afternoon. And that was always a night bug, so it was whatever. But I remember at around 7 in the morning,
my parents
came downstairs, and they just see me sitting at the table with my head in my hands, just pretty much speechless. And they're like, what happened? And I just finished punting to lose the finals, game 3 of the finals of the PTQ on my first top 8. And I was like, I was riding the adrenaline of being up all night and playing, but at the same time, I was just so heartbroken about the loss because it was completely my game to lose and I threw it away.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment was like the first time that I actually felt like I'd done well enough to put myself in that position, but it was also just so disappointing having thrown it away. And that was, at the time, that was for, I want to say Pro Tour Paris 2011. And Paris was one of those cities that I'd always really wanted to go to. So it was really, really hurt for me to lose that one.
A lot on the
line. Then after I top eighted that PTQ, it was kind of like the floodgates opened. And after that, I went on to top eight something like 15 more of those Magic Online PTQs that had like 600, 700 people.
Oh my
gosh. So it was like, without ever winning one, I lost like 3 finals or something, but I never managed to win one. But that was the first moment that I actually felt like I did well in something that wasn't a pre-release or an FNM. Mm-hmm. That was like my first real event that I did well in.
What an incredible story. Thank you for sharing. I mean, it does stink that you lost it in the finals, but just the size of those events and the fact that you were able to consistently get to the top is absolutely inspiring. Like, that's, wow, incredible. And so now what are they doing? Because there's changes, right? And are you still pretty plugged into the Magic Online space?
So right now, and we can talk more about this later, but right now I'm on a bit of a Magic hiatus.
Okay.
So I wasn't playing live Magic nearly as much, but I was still playing Magic Online. And now the system's kind of different. And because I didn't really have an interest in competitive Magic for a while, I also wasn't playing competitive Magic online. And part of that was with the change to the PPTQ system, where you have to do well in a tournament in the middle of the week to win your entry into a weekend PTQ. I didn't really have any interest in doing it. But the system's completely different now. Because of the PPTQ system, PTQs are only like 150, 200, 250 people at most.
Okay.
So it's completely different now. It's way better. I think it's better because the events that you have to win or do well in to qualify for the weekend PTQ are not difficult, and there's a lot of them throughout the week.
Okay.
So it's really easy to win the entry, and once you're in the event itself, it's significantly easier. Like, I would take one of these PTQs over the PTQs I used to play in anytime. Just not close.
Right, for sure.
So, you know, it's different. It's definitely different.
So continuing down, you know, your journey, touching on some milestones, there's two things that we want to dive into, the two stories we want to hear. The first being your worst Magic moment. What was that? What happened?
My worst Magic moment. I think the moment that most negatively, in terms of, I think there's kind of two moments. There's one that has to do with results and one that doesn't. And I'm going to touch on the one that doesn't have to do with results first, just because it was one of those moments that it felt awful, but it also really helped me kind of tighten up a bit. I was playing in a local tournament. I think it was a Grand Prix trial or something, in preparation for my first Grand Prix that I was going to, which was Grand Prix Seattle in whenever it was. I don't even remember. I want to say 2012, but it might have been 2011. And at this event, I was the sole undefeated player going into the last round. And I got paired against a friend of mine whose deck I had built him for the event. We designed the list together, and because I was the only undefeated and he was paired up, I was going to concede to him, which would have gotten us first and second place. And we were kind of sitting there talking, and as we're waiting for the match slip, the judge decides to deck check us. And we explained to him, hey, we're not going to play our match. We're not going to do this, etc. And he's like, well, I'm going to have to deck check you anyways. So he takes away our decks, and there's a store. This is years ago, right? There's a store draft happening in another part of the store. And so because it kind of feels like a formality to me that we're waiting for our decks to come back just to sign a match slip, I get up and I start watching the store draft behind us. And the store is it's not like a super big store, but it's definitely in sections. And I would say that I'm kind of close to the section where the judge is doing the deck check. And the judge at one point looks up, sees me, and he says, hey, you can't be standing there. You're too close to where the deck check is happening. Can you move somewhere else, please? So I'm kind of surprised by this, but I say, sure. And I move to the other side of the store and the other side of where this draft is happening. So I'm looking at a different player, but I'm nowhere within eyesight of what the judge is doing. And a few moments later, he notices me again. And this time, he takes me outside and he decides to disqualify me.
Oh,
he disqualifies me from an event that is in the last round, from a match that I'm not going to be playing. And the disqualification is because he thinks I may be trying to get hidden information by seeing my opponent's deck. But he doesn't do any investigation like talking to my opponent to understand that I know my opponent's 75 because I designed it. So there's no hidden information for me to get. So it was one of those moments where, and I was disqualified, but it didn't end up turning into a ban. But it was definitely the worst I'd felt playing Magic up to that point.
Oof.
Because it felt really unjustified. And it felt like I was being punished, yes, for some actions that I was taking, but if the judge had put some effort into investigation, had talked to my opponent, had talked to anyone else, or just judged the situation by anything outside of the strict guidelines of the book, he would have understood that there was no reason to disqualify me there. Mm-hmm. And months later, he did apologize to me for it. But that was definitely the worst I felt at a Magic tournament up to that point or since that didn't have to do directly with the results of what happened. It left a bad taste in my mouth.
I bet it did. Hopefully no one's in a similar situation, but what did you learn from that? Like what can you share with us that we can move forward with?
I think the biggest takeaway for me from that situation was that I've never been someone who followed the rules super closely. It wasn't that I broke the rules, but it was that I kind of had a disregard for them just because I felt like as long as I was making logical actions and as long as what I was doing made sense and I could explain why it makes sense, things would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And in that situation, it was kind of a wake-up call for me that that's not exactly the case. And it especially isn't the case when I'm putting myself in a situation where there is this entity of the judge program where it is up to discretion. It's not about two people present the facts and then something happens. It's about in that moment, the judge's discretion. Yes, I described my side and the DCI decided not to ban me for my disqualification, but there was nothing that could be done about that moment. And it really made me realize that as long as I was choosing to play in a Magic tournament, it would be better for me to err on the side of caution. And from that moment, it was, I wouldn't stand up when I was getting deck checked. If I wanted to do something, I would check or double check with a judge before I did it, just because the cost of not doing so was way greater than the small inconvenience of making sure things were going by the book and making sure that I was within the lines. So I think it was both a moment of just tightening up in terms of Magic tournament etiquette, but also just a moment of maturing for me to realize that I couldn't just always do things the way I wanted and assume I could get away with it.
Wow. Interesting. Very interesting. And you said you had another story?
The worst I've ever felt at a Magic tournament was my first Grand Prix top eight.
Oh, that's because, weird.
Yeah. So at the time, the thing that was after my, it was a year after my second Pro Tour. And during that time, all of my efforts had been put into qualifying for the Pro Tour again. And this was at a point where if a Grand Prix was not big enough, top eight does not qualify you for the Pro Tour.
Oh, that's
you
right.
have to make top four to qualify for the Pro Tour.
Hmm.
So I, being someone whose mental game was not so strong and being someone who put all his efforts into trying to qualify for the Pro Tour again, found myself in this spot where I had to play one match, essentially a PTQ finals, of which I'd been in many and lost many during that time, both live and online. And I was super stressed out during this one match, and I felt like my deck was good, but it wasn't that good. I felt like I maybe made some mistakes there in the draft, and all of it was kind of culminating in this match where I got to game three, and I kind of tunnel visioned, and I took a line that was defensible but not optimal, and I ended up losing because of it. And after that loss, in that moment where I realized that I top eighted a Grand Prix, but I couldn't enjoy it at all because the one thing that I actually wanted from it, which was a Pro Tour invite, was not there. I hadn't gotten that. That was the worst moment I had in terms of feeling disappointed after what would be a good Magic result. And it felt really bad, even though most people would be happy with a Grand Prix top eight. That was one of those moments where I just wasn't at all.
Wow. Very interesting. Having not been a competitive player during that time, I have heard about, you know, the changes that they've gone through with the Grand Prix and qualifying and stuff like that. So that must have been a frustrating time. So on the flip side, though, on the other side of the coin are our highs. So let's end on a good note. What has been your proudest Magic moment?
My proudest Magic moment, well, it would definitely be the Grand Prix win recently. The Grand Prix Las Vegas win was definitely my proudest Magic moment. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to kind of lead up to that.
Yeah, that's what we love to do. We love to dive into, you know, how you prepared for that event, what it looked like, and then tell us some stories from it. So take it away.
What I'm going to start with is my Magic hiatus. In 2015 at Grand Prix Las Vegas, I was in this stage where it had been years since I qualified for the Pro Tour, and I'd had a lot of close results. But what I'd realized was more and more, I would have good results. I would have results that would be caches. I would have results that would be PTQ top eights, PTQ finals, a Grand Prix top eight, and none of them would feel good because everything felt short of my goal. And I was feeling like no matter how much work I put into the game, because I was devoting almost all of my free time, all of my effort, all of my thoughts to the game, and no matter what I was doing, I wasn't able to break through to the point that I wanted to. And it kind of felt like a losing calculation, because my losses would make me feel awful and they would take a huge mental toll on me. But my wins, however much you can define them as wins, would not bring me the satisfaction to counter that. Mm-hmm. So I was always at a net loss. Mm-hmm. And at that Grand Prix, I started out 9-0 after day one. And it was this amazing feeling, because the last time I started out 9-0 at a Grand Prix was Houston, when I had converted that into a top 8. And I felt really good. I spent a lot of time drafting, testing the draft format. It was Modern Masters 2015. Mm-hmm. I tested the heck out of the format, and I felt super prepared for day two. And then day two, I just 1-2'd both drafts for a minimum cash result. And at that moment, how I felt was kind of the culmination of how I'd been feeling building up for months and years. And after that, I just decided that for my own sake, I needed to take a break from competitive magic. And I really decided that I wasn't going to travel to any reasonable Grand Prix anymore. I wasn't going to play in every PTQ. I wasn't going to play in every Grand Prix trial, every local event. I was just going to stop. And my goal was to just stop playing Magic altogether. But I kind of realized that over the years, as I had played more and more Magic, and as I had devoted time to Magic Online, all of my other hobbies had slowly been replaced by Magic, because I was so devoted to trying to and focused on trying to get back to the Pro Tour that anytime I had a choice between something and Magic, like if I had the choice between going out for the day or going to a PTQ, the PTQ was the priority because it qualified me for the Pro Tour. If I had the choice of playing a video game or playing Magic Online, Magic Online was the priority because it kept me sharp. It helped me learn a format. And I had to juggle so many formats. I had to be proficient at Modern. I had to be proficient at Standard. I had to keep up with all the decks. I had to be good at Limited. So it was like, I realized that I didn't, if by trying to stop playing Magic, I had nothing to do with my time. So instead, I stopped playing Magic competitively. And I still, whenever I did have free time, I was still playing Magic Online. So I definitely stayed more into the game than I thought I would and more than I wanted to. But at the same time, a lot of the stress that I was feeling from the years of exhaustion and trying and failing had more or less gone away. And I was in a lot better place mentally. I was working on my health physically, which was something that I had not been able to do while focusing on Magic so much. And you could say that from all aspects, my life as a whole was improving during that time. And I was still playing Magic to a level that I was enjoying without getting to the level that was stressing me out. Mm-hmm. And this went on for a year and a half or so. I played local Grand Prix Vancouver's when they were there, just because it was very hard for me to say no to a local Grand Prix. But otherwise, I did not travel to any Grand Prix. I did not travel to any tournaments. I did not play in any PPTQs. I put all efforts of trying to qualify for the Pro Tour on hold. And I had no intentions of changing that. But earlier this year, when Grand Prix Las Vegas was announced, I decided that it would be fun for me to go. I wasn't even sure if I was going to play, but Las Vegas just being the city that it is, and during the time when I know I'll have so many friends in town, it felt like it would be a nice vacation to go and just be able to see people that I hadn't seen for a while and just have a good time. And a few weeks before the tournament, I decided, well, I've been playing some of the limited format online and I feel pretty good about the limited Grand Prix. So my plan is I'm going to just play the limited Grand Prix. And I showed up, I played the limited Grand Prix. I opened what I would say was probably like an 8.5 or a 9 out of 10 pool. Like, it was a really amazing pool. And I had no buys for the tournament. So I played a trial the night before and won buys. And nice. I went I went 0-3 drop from the tournament. I could not win a match. It wasn't really disappointing. It was mostly disappointing just because I knew there was more Magic happening and I wasn't planning on playing. And through a series of events that were all just last minute decisions and coming from conversations with different people, I registered for the Grand Prix the night before at the Modern Grand Prix at 1 a.m. At 5 a.m, I sent my friend a message and I'm like, hey, can you make this deck for me? And somehow, because my friends are my friends and they're the same type of people that I am, he was awake at 5 a.m. And by 5:15, he was like, yeah, okay, I have it already. So I submitted my deck list at 5:30, got 2 hours of sleep.
Oh my gosh.
And played in the Modern Grand Prix.
Oh my gosh.
So it was
really
just a series of unlikely events that all led into me playing this event. And that night, from 1 a.m. when I decided to play in the tournament until 5 a.m, I'd gone to a pool party. And it was just, I wasn't planning on doing well. I wasn't considering that I would do well. I hadn't played Modern in months. I had no idea what the current state of it was. And for me, all that mattered was that I just be able to enjoy myself. And I don't put any of the stress on myself. And I relax. And then after day one, I went 9-0. So here I am 2 years later in Vegas, having taken a hiatus from competitive Magic from the last time I went 9-0. And I'm in the same city. And I find myself in the same spot in the tournament. Mm. But this time, the last time, the night before, I wasn't able to sleep at all. I was stressed out. I was losing it with the amount of pressure I was putting on myself. This time, after the 9-0, I went out to dinner with friends. I went back to the house and I got sleep and I just relaxed. And the next morning I woke up and it was kind of whatever happens, happens. And the entire time I was relaxed and there was like a little bit of stress. Like I can't say there wasn't. Once I got to 12-1, when I picked up my first loss in round 13 and I knew that one match in the next two rounds qualified me for the Pro Tour, but losing both of them meant getting nothing. That was because at 12-0, one match, one win in three rounds qualified me for the Pro Tour. And that spot felt great. Once I got the first loss, I started sweating a little. It was a little stressful. But once I made that top eight and I got the Pro Tour qualification, after years of trying for it in an event where I put no effort into it, it was this, it kind of felt like a joke, but it felt like the best joke, like the greatest joke I'd ever heard. And I had no problems with being the subject of this joke. And then I was just completely relaxed for the rest of the top eight. And my mental game was on point. I didn't lose my cool at all, even in the finals when in game two I mulliganed to four. It was just during that time I was completely relaxed. I was able to make logical decisions instead of letting the panic and the hugeness of the situation kind of get to me. I just played the best Magic that I could. And after I won, it was kind of this feeling of disbelief of how this had happened when I had all but resigned myself to never qualifying for the Pro Tour again, let alone ever winning a Grand Prix. And when that kind of sunk in, it was this moment of just having accomplished something that I wanted to for 8 years of playing Magic. And that was the greatest Magic moment for me.
That is an amazing, you know, story. And it's just, it's incredible to hear the stories like, oh yeah, I didn't, you know, didn't practice and went all the way. And, but yours in particular is just, wow, absolutely wow. One thing is, why was the Pro Tour, why is it so important to you? Why did you try so hard to get back to it?
Because, and I think this had a lot to do with what led to my hiatus in the first place, was I was going through a stage in my life where I wasn't going to school and what I was doing for work wasn't really something that I wanted to be doing long term. I couldn't consider it a career. And my health, physically and mentally, were both not anywhere close to what would be considered healthy or good. So everything in my life kind of felt in disarray. And the only thing that I felt like I was good at, the only thing I felt that brought me joy, was magic. And so because of that, because every other aspect of my life felt out of control and felt bad, I directly tied my self-worth and my happiness and how I felt about myself with my magic results. But it's really dangerous to do that, because magic is a game of variance. Magic is a game where it's true there's a lot of skill involved, but there is also inherent variance. And for me to connect these two things meant that I needed to feel like I was good at magic to feel good about myself. But top aiding PTQs, especially when all my friends, everyone that I met, was through Grand Prix and the Pro Tour, and they were all these amazing players that were regular Pro Tour players. And so for me, going 11-4 at a Grand Prix, getting to the finals of a PTQ, winning local events, that wasn't what being a good Magic player was. Playing on the Pro Tour was what being a good Magic player was. Yeah. And for me not to be able to do that did not let me think of myself as a good Magic player. Mm-hmm. And because of that, if I wasn't a good Magic player, then I wasn't good at the only thing I felt good at. Mm-hmm. And that was what took a huge mental toll on me. All my self-worth was tied to how I did at Magic, and doing well at Magic required me to be on the Pro Tour.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's interesting how we get ourselves wrapped up in that, and how it took, you know, going on hiatus and really taking that pressure off to kind of, you know, break through that. Do you feel like you've broken through that and now you can play Magic at, you know, any level, including competitive, without putting that much pressure on yourself?
Honestly, I don't know. I think I'm in a lot better place mentally than I've ever been while playing Magic. And I think the fact that my health has improved greatly during this time is definitely plays a role in it. But I don't know. A lot of people ask me, so now that you've won the Grand Prix, does that mean you're back? And my answer is, I don't know. I don't think I'm back right now. I don't think I want to throw myself fully into competitive Magic again, but I'm going to give it my all to practice for the Pro Tour. And depending on how the Pro Tour goes, I'm going to reevaluate from there.
Okay.
I think I'm more likely to travel to a random Grand Prix that I think I'll enjoy myself. But I think I'm past the point where I want to devote everything to Magic to try to chase qualifying for the Pro Tour.
Right.
But I'm definitely going to try to qualify now and again. So I'm going to play more competitively than I have been, but not to the level that I was at my highest.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
At this point, it's if it happens, it happens.
Great.
Right?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And a while ago, you mentioned how you really wanted to go to Paris. Have you been able to make it out there, whether for Magic or not?
Yeah. So after Pro Tour Honolulu in 2012, I had a pretty sizable Magic collection. And at the time, I wasn't really doing anything. So I decided to sell my collection, which had gained value in the years since, because I was able to borrow pretty much anything I needed because of the amazing Vancouver community that I had behind me and my friends. And I sold my collection and I used the money to take a 5-week backpacking trip around Europe, including Paris and a lot of other cities that I wanted to go to. And I had no regrets. I mean, good. I had some regrets in that the cards were worth way more now than they were when I sold them.
Oh, well.
But I had no regrets in that it was an amazing life experience. And
yeah, so magic got you to Paris one way or other. So it wasn't for a tournament or an event, but you through the magic cards you sold, you still made your way over there. So that's great.
Yeah, magic actually got me to Japan for my first pro tour.
Excellent.
Which was one of the most, I'm just going to talk about this because I just remembered it. When I was in high school, there was a exchange program where we would host some Japanese students, and then we would in turn go to Japan. And because of that program, I really wanted to go to Japan, and I was part of it. And last minute, they cut me from the trip.
Oh man!
Because at the time, I was extremely overweight, and they felt like my physical level was not one that could endure a group trip in Japan where there would be hiking and lots of walking involved.
Interesting.
In my opinion, a little not their decision to make. However, it was a decision that was made after I'd hosted a student, and it felt really bad. And so Japan was something I'd hyped myself up to go to and then not gotten to go. So when Magic qualified me for Japan for my first pro tour, it was this moment of vindication of, if I couldn't go to Japan back then, I earned my way there one way or another. And that was a really satisfying moment.
Cool. All right. Very cool. And man, we're pulling into the home stretch here, but just, I guess, a few more things. As you've played, obviously, a ton of Magic, what's the biggest mistake that you see players make?
The biggest mistake I see players make is, and I'm definitely guilty of this, is tunnel visioning on something, anything, whether it's a line that you think of turns in advance, whether it's focusing on a situation where you're losing and trying to survive instead of figuring out how you can win. It's when Magic players get something in their mind about how a situation is, because a mind is kind of like a computer, right? It's it operates at its best when you're regularly refreshing your data and making sure that you're aware of all the new information that had happened, and you take that into consideration when making a decision. But when you tunnel vision on something and you're not able to get past that, then it leads to the most losses, just because you're not using your brain to its fullest potential and you're not using all the information you have.
Yeah, that's a really good way of of putting it. I love that, you know, refreshing that information and reevaluating and using your brain optimally. That's really neat. What's the biggest growth you've experienced from playing Magic?
I think it's just being able to operate in social settings. Just growing up, before I started Magic, I wasn't really a social person, and I didn't really know how to interact with people very well. And through Magic, it kind of helped me open up and make more friends and feel like I was accepted in a community and be able to be myself and be able to speak to people. And that kind of helped me really become better at social interaction. And I'm forever grateful to Magic for that, because it really did help me.
Man, I love it. You know, it's really neat to see what Magic can do, you know, for us. So, and there's several other things that we can talk about. I would love to, but we'll have you back on the show as you continue to do great things in Magic. Oh, on that note, I guess we did talk about some of the events that you have coming up, so that's cool. So I would like to remind the Prodigies, if you want to connect with Monty, you can do so on Twitter. He's at ZapGaze, ZapGaze. So as we close things out, Monty, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
Honestly, I think the biggest thing is, and I definitely am guilty of this, is putting too much stress on yourself while playing Magic. It's easy to lose sight of the big picture, and it's really easy to kind of become engrossed in this game and this goal. And at some point, there's definite diminishing returns to putting time and effort into the game. Like, sometimes it it is required to take a step back, take a break, and reevaluate what your priorities are and whether you're really doing everything you can to improve, or whether what you're doing is, you may be doing something, but it may actually be hurtful. Like, there's a point where the 100th F&M, for example, is just, it doesn't have that much to offer you if your goal is to improve at magic. You really need to try to evaluate what you're trying to do and what you're trying to accomplish in magic, and then figure out not just how to do it, but the most efficient way to do it, because it's really easy to overwork yourself and become burnt out. And it's hard to sometimes see that when you've got this single goal in mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, Monty, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse. And thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us. Like, I learned a lot, and I can't wait for the Prodigies to hear your story and to learn and grow as well. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
There you have it, episode 229 with Manny Davuti. Thank you so much, Manny, for coming on to the show. Prodigies, you can get the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Manny Davuti, where, of course, you'll find a synopsis of what we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. That said, I hope you have a fantastic weekend. Get out there and play some magic, whether that's FNM or with some friends or a Grand Prix or wherever you are. I hope that you have fun and that you depart every plane victorious. Until next time, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.